Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is the New York Times bestselling author Jeffrey Deaver, who is the author of the brand new book, The Midnight Lock. It's a Lincoln Rhyme novel, and the book is available everywhere. This book kept me entertained for a couple of hours as I just couldn't put this thing down. So, Jeffrey, you've brought back Lincoln Rhyme again for a new adventure here. And jumping right in, what's the 10-second explanation you want people to know? Because I don't want to give anything away. This was such a deliciously well-plotted book.
Well, hello, Brian. Good to talk to you, and thank you for those kind words. I know it is kind of tough to talk about my books, but I'll give you the, we call it the elevator pitch, you know, describing a book and the time it takes to go from the 10th floor to the bottom floor. But in this book, a Lincoln Rhyme novel, the 15th one, the series began with The Bone Collector, of course, some years ago. Lincoln Rhyme is on the trail of this genius of a villain who can pick any lock that's ever been invented. And I don't mean these, you know, doorknob electronic locks. You know, those can be hacked by a teenager. I'm not interested in those. These are the metal locks, the ones that we all are quite familiar with but don't pay a lot of attention to. He breaks into people's apartment, as the name of the book suggests, after midnight, and then he doesn't kill anybody. All he does is he rearranges things and terrifies people when they wake up and realize that somebody has been in their house. Of course, it's a Jeffrey Deaver book, so there's a lot more going on. That's sort of the start that leads to the various twists and turns, but that's the basic pitch of the story.
Well, Lincoln Rhyme is a quadriplegic, and he works in this lab at his apartment in the Upper West Side of New York, or the Central Park West. And what I love is when you think of a science lab involving a criminalist, you think of DNA. Somebody leaves spit or a bodily fluid behind. This is a little more involved, and can you touch on the types of material that Lincoln Rhyme is investigating and putting together as to who's been where? Because I think it's fascinating, the little things that you can detect from just a piece of sand left behind.
Oh, it's amazing. That's why I will never be a criminal. Well, there are more reasons than that, Brian. But with all this scientific information and the scientific instruments, that's where most of the crime solving occurs. You know, occasionally there's an eyewitness, but as Lincoln Rhyme says, I don't trust witnesses. You know, they can make mistakes, they can lie, but you can't cheat science, and you know, the technology is completely honest. But in this story, there's a substance on a tiny grain of sand that is pivotal to the case. I mean, you can hardly see the grain of sand, let alone what that sand has touched. But an entire murder case hinges on that grain of sand. And it's not giving too much away to say that maybe Lincoln Rhyme isn't quite as perfect as we tend to think he is. Maybe there's a mistake made, and that has drastic consequences, and that introduces a whole other subplot in my books. Now, your listeners who are familiar with my books know that I love not just to tell the crime story, but to have other subplots going on, because I want to, you know, basically put my characters in a pressure cooker and turn the heat up as hot as I can. And so all these different stories are going along at the same time, and they kind of interweave and all come together at the end with a big surprise ending. But as you know, I like my surprise endings plural. So there are three or four twists just when it looks like the book is over with. Bang, there's another reversal, and we continue on to the very end.
So much of crime fiction involves motive, but what does Lincoln Rhyme think of crime motives?
He has no interest. Thanks for picking that up, Brian. You're a very perceptive reader. Again, he I think he says a line in the book, I'm paraphrasing because I wrote it a while ago, and I've written two books since then, but he says, I don't care whether this killer murdered someone because he believed the victim was an alien from the planet Xantar, or he believes that this is someone who is about to kill him in a robbery. That's irrelevant. That maybe the lawyers in court can talk about that, but even then, Lincoln doesn't have much interest. What he wants to know is what scientific connection is there between the killer and this crime. There's a French criminalist. A criminalist is a forensic scientist, that's a fancy word for it, a fellow in the early 1900s, Edmond Locard, a French crime solver, And he said that every time a criminal comes in contact with the victim or the scene of a crime, there is a transfer of evidence. It has to happen. It's impossible not for that to occur. But whether the investigator has the talent and the wherewithal and the energy to find that trace, that's a different story.
One of the other things that I took away from this book is the way that you drop some things in there that are probably things you've thought about over the years, and one involved Lincoln testifying in court and the oath that everybody just sort of recites this mantra about
yeah.
truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Can you explain your thoughts on that and how it just happened to drop into this book? Because it didn't affect the plot, really, but it was an interesting aside.
No, it's very funny. I'll tell you, Brian, they're allowed to occasionally slip a little bit of their ironic worldview in. And at some point, I just flew back from my book tour in Italy, and I was at the airport listening to the announcement, and an airline, the desk agent, was saying, "This is the last and final boarding call for flight so-and-so." And I said, "Well, is it the last call or the final call? Is there something worse about a last final call?" I thought you could maybe save a little energy and bandwidth if you just said, "This is the final call," or "This is the last call." And that's going to show up in a book someday. But my riff on the oath one takes in court is this. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And now often they cut off the "so help you God," although that's in some courts, that's kind of optional. But Lincoln is thinking, "Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?" Well, first of all, how is the whole truth different from the truth? And nothing but the truth, haven't you already decided to do that? Why don't we just have the oath, "I promise I'm not going to lie," and let it go at that? And you know, I have to say, Brian, that kind of gets to the essence of Lincoln Rhyme, because he's a bit of a curmudgeon. You know, he's a hero. I mean, he will do whatever it takes to find the bad guy, but he has no patience for intolerance, for prejudice, for laziness, for politics, and that comes out in the book. And you know, it's interesting. Lincoln is a very popular character for a number of reasons, but I have heard from my readers that what they like about him is that he doesn't put up with any nonsense. And, you know, he's not the sort of hero, as you mentioned. He's disabled. He can't walk into a bar and beat up the bad guy. You know, we have those cliched scenes where there's some, maybe an unfortunate person being set upon by motorcyclists or being beat up or something, and the hero breaks up the fight and saves the innocent person. Lincoln can't do that, but he can, by his thinking and by his what he says, can, you know, represent a real heroic personality, and I think people respect that.
I'm chatting with Jeffrey Deaver about his brand new Lincoln Rhyme novel. This one's called The Midnight Lock. You mentioned Lincoln's handicap and his disability. He's not able to walk into a bar and beat up somebody. Something else that's important, though, is he has to work a lot harder than most people would to get an essence of place around New York City, because a lot of times so much evidence is related to place, and that relates to a specific perpetrator. So how does he deal with that?
Yes, that's a great question. One of the things we authors like to do is to create a backstory for our heroes, well, for all our characters, but I'm thinking of Lincoln as a hero. And the backstory involves maybe looking at something in their history that impacts the present and that, you know, gives them some nostalgia and some, you know, and realistically some sadness and so forth. And one of the things that Lincoln misses most about his inability or his it's not inability, but the difficulty with which he has to navigate the city of New York, is that what he used to do when he was mobile was spend hours, sometimes days, wandering the streets of the city to get a flavor of different neighborhoods. And this helped him become a better crime solver, because he said, you know, the red brick that from that demolition over in Tudor City, a part of Lower Manhattan, so I that red brick, you know what, that relates to this corruption case I was working on last week. And he doesn't have that now. He misses that. And yet he has to work a little harder. And then, of course, he's got his now wife, originally his partner, but now wife, Amelia Sachs, who does go into the city and with video links and so forth, you know, they're online with the radio, they can communicate. It's not quite the same. It works out well, but you see, they are a yin-yang kind of symbiotic connection between the two of them. He is, of course, the, you know, the soaring intellect, and she, of course, brilliant as well, but she's more the intuitive cop. And together they, you know, they get on the case, and this villain I've created, nicknamed the Locksmith, almost proves too much for them, but I can't say any more because I'm a suspense writer. I have to leave your listeners in suspense.
Well, you know, something else, it's in typical Deaver book fashion. This takes place over the course of a couple of days, you know, just several hours over a couple of days. But how did you decide the jumping in point for the particular story? Because the Locksmith was already doing his thing at this point. So how'd you pick the particular time to jump into this story?
Sure. I think it's, I love fractured timelines. And if you ever saw the TV show, which I loved, Breaking Bad, that is a classic example of nonlinear storytelling. Now, it has to serve a purpose. You can't jump from front to back, or I'm sorry, jump from the middle to the end and then to the front again throughout the course of the story. But if it serves a purpose, then it's very helpful to do, and it served my purpose because this book has various issues in it. It deals with fake news, with the absence of privacy, the way we give away information online. And I was able to start basically in sort of the middle of the story, then jump back and forth in time, because I'm a very sneaky kind of writer. I want my readers to have a great emotional experience and have all those twists and turns. And by adjusting the timeline, it let me do that. It made the book more of a roller coaster because I could sort of slowly ladle out the information about the characters and about the plot.
So you said you've written a couple of books since then. Either one of those a culture shock?
As a matter of fact, it is. Yes, next year. I'm trying to think of what time it is, what year it is. It's 21 now. Next year in 22, there'll be a new Colter Shaw book, untitled as yet. And then that will be the fourth in the Colter Shaw series. And then the year after that, 23, there'll be another Lincoln Rhyme book. And pretty much I will be alternating between Lincoln Rhyme and Colter Shaw. Those have proved to be my two most popular heroes, and you know, I have nothing against some authors write with other authors. I think that's great. I just can't do that. I kind of a control freak, so I need to write just the book by myself, and that means I can't really do more than one a year at this stage. So you know, I'd like to be able to say we'll have a Lincoln and a Colter one book twice. I'm sorry, each of those once a year, but that's probably not going to happen at this stage. I need to sit back, watch the game, and watch TV occasionally.
Well, we appreciate whenever you put a book out and enjoy us to talk about it. This one is called The Midnight Lock. It's the latest Lincoln Rhyme novel. It's by Jeffrey Deaver. Jeffrey, just another fantastic talk, and thanks for joining me to talk about this book.
Brian, really enjoyed it. You take care now.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.